You're listening to Around Comics, episode 251, brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix.
And Whiteout.
And Whiteout.
Brought to you by Whiteout.
Oh, there you go. Whiteout.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each week a revolving panel of guests talk about everything in and around the world of comic books and comics culture. And Around Comics is recorded at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago.
They haven't kicked you out yet?
Oh, no. Mark's watching like old reruns of Star Trek Voyager over at the computer, so... He's watching Jeeves and Wooster.
Ooh, classy.
How cultured.
That's the glorious one, isn't it?
That's exactly right.
I'm Christopher Niesman. Let me get you introduced to this all-star panel. First of all, returning from last week, the creative mind behind Mail Order Ninja, among other things, Mr. Josh Elder.
Greetings and salutations.
Oh, well there, sir. Welcome back. And also the prodigal son has returned again, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Yo.
And next is the voice of Word Balloon, Mr. John Suntress.
Mr. Smartass Greek trying to be a Jew.
Good evening. I am in time for shul. I'm here. I'm sitting down.
And our very special guest joining us on the phone all the way from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Greg Rucka. Well, hello there, sir. You have to be a little punchy at this point. It's not that late in Portland as compared to here in Chicago, but
it is about 9:20.
It's about 11 here. But you have been twittering today pictures of pretty people in L.A. So I think you've had a long travel day, man.
Yeah, today was the media presentation day for Whiteout, which they informed me I was invited to attend, and I guess when Warner Brothers invites you to attend something, the implication is we and our 300 metric ton of attorney behind us invite you to attend. So
it's an offer you couldn't refuse. In other words,
well. And I ended up, I flew down to L.A. late last night, and they have this event, and I guess this is the way they work generally. I was unable to get a straight answer on this, but what they ended up doing, what today was, is we were at a hotel, and they get several rooms in the hotel, and they get a couple conference rooms, and they bring in all these media folk for different press conferences. So I did, two press conferences, one for domestic media and one for international media, with Kate Beckinsale and Gabriel Mock, Joel Silver for domestic, and the same with the addition of, I keep screwing up his last name, it's Alex, I want to say Laughlin, but I'm pretty sure I just pooched that, for international. And then you sit behind these tables and they ask questions like, so Kate, in the movie, your hair, it was very short, and we know you love your beautiful long hair, so when we see your beautiful long hair is back to its beautiful, beautiful length, tell us how long it took you to get back to its beautiful, beautiful long length. And Kate says, well, it was actually a fabulous wig. And then they go, oh, that's wonderful, a fabulous wig. Tell us more about your hair, Kate. And Kate then tells people about her hair. And then, you know, somebody will ask a question about, you know, oh, so when you were filming in Antarctica, and there will be a pause, and then we'll say, well, actually, we were filming on a frozen lake in Winnipeg. Oh, when you were filming on a lake in Winnipeg, was it cold? and things like that. So it was...
At what point do you pull out the razor and start slitting your wrists?
You know, you sit there and you smile. Because you're like, I don't know if any of you people have cameras. and I don't want to be the guy who's going to, you know, the worst thing in the world would be, you know, there's Greg Rucker, creator of Whiteout, at the media thing, looking entirely disinterested.
So this is this is completely different from a DC panel then?
Yes.
Wait a minute. I don't know.
I would not compare the two.
Okay, because I was going to say, what about the times when you get, yeah, Wonder Woman looks better in heels. What's with the boots?
No, I was talking about Greg's disinterested look.
Ah.
Hey, hey.
Wow.
I think he just needs more questions about his hair.
Yeah.
I think that's,
or like
that's
thereof,
a very, very short question.
Dun-dun-dun.
Hey, now.
So, well, hey. No, and then you go from that, and then you do one-on-ones. They set you up with individuals who ask you questions, and everything's really timed. So, like, you know, you do this, and then you've got a handler who basically shoves you there, goes, 10 minutes, you're done, and they move you to the next person. 10 minutes, you're done. And then, okay, now you've got a phone interview. Get on the phone. 10 minutes, you're done. Wrap it up. And then next thing I know, I'm back at, you know, I'm at LAX and on a plane. And that was the very exciting day. So,
wow.
You know, it's the first time I've seen any of the actors since the filming, and that was, you know, almost 2 years ago.
Wow.
That it wrapped. So it was actually kind of nice, because when I walked in to sort of the meeting area this morning, you know, Gabriel immediately greeted me. Kate immediately greeted me. They knew who I was. Joel came in and needed a moment. You know, he was like, hey,
who are you again?
You look beautiful, you know, and Gabe, you're looking great. And
how did you get in here?
Ouch.
So,
yeah.
But, you know, it's just such a wild trip, the whole process. I got it. Yeah, there's not a whole lot more I feel I can say about it. It's just the whole thing borders on surreal.
Oh, sure.
Especially when they're asking questions about her hair, you know what I mean? And you sit there and you go, they flew me down and put me up in a hotel, and this is the kind of questions they're asking. Okay, why not?
This sounds like fodder for a future Atticus chapter, you know?
I came up with two story ideas while I was there.
There
so,
you go.
You know,
there you go.
There's material pending, I should say.
Excellent, man.
Well, you know, you've seen Whiteout, right? You saw a screening of it. We have not been so lucky. It's coming out on September 11th, and looking very, very forward to it. What's your impression of it? You know, just, you know, not just as, you know, the guy that wrote the story that this is based on, but just as a film fan, were you excited to see it?
Well,
happy
I
with
mean,
the final product?
No, look, I've got to be perfectly frank and say I have no perspective on it, and I really have none. One of the producers on the film, a guy named David Gambino, who I worked with a lot when I was on set, he's a really good guy. He and I were talking about it, and we were both like, we can't see it. We are literally snowblind, you know. I saw the screening. I saw it with my wife and with my friends Nunzio DeFilippis and Christina Weir, and Jen, Nuns, and Christy hadn't seen it.
Okay.
And they all walked out, and Nunzio was like, it's a good movie. And I'm like, I can't tell. He's like, no, really, it's a good movie. It does everything a good movie should do. It gives you everything you need. It's perfectly entertaining. This is a good, solid movie. And I'm like, okay. You know, because all I can see are things where I was like, oh, yeah, I wrote that scene. Oh, they cut that. Oh, that... huh, that's not what I remember. Oh, they must have changed that. Did they do that in a reshoot? You know? I long ago reached the point where, you know, the movie of Whiteout, the graphic novel of Whiteout are two entirely different animals. And Lieber and I have talked about this many times. You know, we wrote a graphic novel. Mm-hmm. And as a graphic novel, I think even 10 years on, it still holds up. It's good.
Yeah,
we
sure.
didn't write a movie, and if you tried to shoot the graphic novel, you'd have a crappy movie, and there's just no way around it. So, you know, obviously they made changes for the film, and those changes I think work for the film, but I like I said, my impressions are so. I wish I could just say I loved it or I hated it or anything like that, but like I said, I'm being totally honest and. I think it's good. Scarrett kicks ass.
Well,
Kate Beckinsale is stunning. You know, I mean, the action sequences are amazing.
Have you had an opportunity to sort of accidentally be sitting at home and turn on the TV and see the trailer come up yet? Because I saw it the other night for the first time, the trailer. I was just watching TV and I saw it, and I got to say, it was kind of neat having known you now for a couple of years and have
There's
seen
Greg's
it.
Movie.
Like, yeah, it's just kind of like, wow, that's kind of weird that a guy that I've, you know, smoked cigarettes with in the Rosemont Convention Center parking area, that's his movie up there on the screen. So I can't imagine for you what that would be like.
Yeah, it's been pretty trippy. Actually, what was really weird was Jen and I went down to LA to see the screening, right, a couple weeks ago. And as we're driving, we flew into Burbank. We get in a rental car, and we're driving to, you know, going to visit, you know, where we're going to stay in Hollywood. And as we're coming down La Brea, there's a great big whiteout billboard. And Jen saw it and shrieked. just let out this involuntary, blah! And I was like, ah, what? Ah! You know, nearly careening off the road as I'm driving. And then, you know, we don't, most of everything we watch on TV is TiVo'd. Mm-hmm. So an ad comes up and we fast forward, right? So we fast forward and then they say, oh, no, wait. Oh my God, that's the trailer. So yeah, it is. It's, like I said, the whole thing borders on surreal.
Well, yeah, if you're interested, they're running the trailer on History Channel during Gangland. So I saw
perfect.
I was like, oh, excellent.
How do you know that?
Well, I was yeah.
Well, Gangland.
It's a show I can't turn off. I'm like totally trapped by
Crips, Bloods. Come
on. Yeah, I'm learning about the Tongo Blast. You know, last night, and I'm like, ooh, Whiteout. You know, so.
I'm curious too. As the film gets closer, how much more press are you going to be doing? Are you just like on this crazy schedule till the 11th?
I don't know. I think that was the last big thing they had me doing.
Okay.
And I think the next thing is, going to the premiere, which is, I believe, the 9th. Wow. And there's a division of Warner Brothers that apparently, you know, handles all these things. So we get letters, you know, emails come, and they say, you must fill out these forms. This, you know, if you're going to be there. And, you know, we will arrange for transportation for you. It really is. Again, it's like you see the specter of that metric tonnage of attorney. You know, because I'm actually, like, in my contract, you have these many tickets to the premiere, you will attend. and I suspect that I'm kind of done until the movie comes out.
Uh-huh.
I think that if the movie catches, if it does reasonably well, if it acquits itself, there may be more attendant publicity they're going to want me to do to follow. But let's be, I mean, be perfectly frank about it. You know, I didn't write the movie. You know, Steve Lieber and I did the graphic novel it's based off of. And I'm nowhere near as attractive as anybody else in the movie. So, you know, if you're going to put a face on TV, it wouldn't be mine. So I kind of would be surprised if there's anything actually, anything else that comes down the line officially.
Well, you did get a credit on the movie, though, did you not?
Yeah, no, I've got an executive producer credit.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Wow.
This is, yes, it sounds very impressive, doesn't it?
Shit, yeah.
Yeah, you know how you do that? Your attorney goes, let's see if we can get you an extra $5,000.
Nice. Hey, man, right there on the resume.
You've got a good attorney. Stay with that guy.
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, there's a nice credit that comes up in the end of the film. It says, you know, based on Whiteout by Greg Rucka and Steve Lieber, or Steve Lieber and Greg Rucka. I can't remember the order. I think we wanted it alphabetical, but for the life of me, I don't know. Published by Oni Press, and
cool.
There you go. There's my name.
Well, I remember
it gets its own card. That's kind of exciting.
Oh, cool.
I remember when Max Collins had Road to Perdition, and I mean, you know, he didn't write the screenplay, but man, they had Max in London, I know, for the screening there, and he had a nice little tour for the movie and everything. So here's hoping you get a little, you know, free trip. Yeah. I don't know if that's a pain in the ass or not, you know.
It may be the difference between having Paul Newman in your movie and not. I don't know.
Fair point.
But I will say, Tom Skerritt in this film is just, every scene he's in is fantastic. He is, and he was on the set. You know, he's one of these guys who just kind of in the presence and you're like, wow, this is a man who knows it. You know, I mean, he has that certainty and that self-possession. And it comes across on the screen. And his performance alone, I think, is worth the price of admission. I think he's fabulous in it.
Nice. How's Steve Lieber rolling with all this? You know, we've talked to you a few times, and I see Steve on Twitter, you know, being, you know, kind of excited about it. Have you talked to him through the whole process?
But we stay in communication. We don't talk that often. Every time we talk about this, it's been, you know, are you excited? I'm excited. Are you excited? Yes, I'm excited. What about you? I honestly think he's as excited. I actually think he may be a little more excited about Underground, you know, that he's doing with Jeff Parker.
Yeah, sure.
And that they've got that slated to come out. And from what I've seen of that, you know, with good reason. So I think he's in a nice position now where he's got movie and new book, and mm-hmm. so things are singing along there.
Yeah, we had Jeff on about a month or so ago, and it was fortunately, that was all started because Steve had tweeted that he needed help promoting the book because someone broke into the poor guy's house and stole his computer.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out about that the same way everybody else did, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah. That's kind of ridiculous, but, yeah. You know, but, yeah, definitely if you're listening out there, go pick up Underground by Steve Lieber and Jeff Parker. It looks fantastic. This portion of Around Comics is brought to you by Netflix. Right now, you can start a free 2-week trial by going to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics. At Netflix, you'll find over 100,000 titles to choose from, including classics and new releases, as well as TV series. Plans start from as low as $4.99 per month, and you can keep each movie as long as you want with no late fees ever. Netflix has free shipping both ways, and you can expect your next selection to be delivered in about one business day. Now watch some movies and TV series over the internet for no extra charge. I use this service with my Xbox 360 and personal laptop and love it. So head over to www.netflix.com/aroundcomics and get started with your free trial today.
Speaking of new books, Detective Comics, now we've got a couple of issues that have come out, and I got to say, man, J.H. Williams' stuff.
Oh, my God.
It's like every page is a work of art that can be framed. It's absolutely fantastic.
And I was saying this, and John can attest to this, because we did a Word Balloon interview.
Yes, we did.
You know, before the issues came out, and I was like, no, people have no idea what this is going to look like. They've just got no idea what he's doing with these pages. It is stunning, I think. I really, you know, I'm a broken record on this, but I really do think that J.H. is, he is changing the language of comics with this.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's a radical shift, but I do think he's certainly introducing a new dialect. And man, it's something else. You know, I mean, the new issue, 856, just the dance pages, you know, are just so beautifully done. And to go from that sequence, you know, flip back to the beginning of the book and the hyper-rendering on, you know, the Monster Men, on Abbott and those crews. And, you know, we nicknamed them all as, you know, Abbott, because he's got a name. And then it's Octoman and Gator Girl. You know? And Octoman is terrifying. I mean, the way he rendered the flesh on that guy, you're like, I wouldn't want to be touched by that. And literally to have a visceral response like that to something, you know, on the printed page, to have a visceral tactile response, I think is incredible. That's not something that you tend to have, you know, when you're reading a comic.
Well, you're writing a great story there, and obviously J.H. is doing stuff that I don't think most comic fans have seen in a comic book before, but I think the unsung hero in that book is Dave Stewart.
Well, you know, I would be inclined to agree, except, you know, Jim and I sing about him.
I was
going to
say, Greg did a good job singing about it. Well, you were saying when we talked too that to get that right shade of red for Kate.
Yeah. No. Well, and that's the thing. You know, I mean, Jim. You know, Jim is really he's comprehensive in how he approaches the art. So it isn't simply the I'll hand him the script, and he goes. It's, you know, we sit down and we have long conversations before I start scripting. You know, which is, okay, this is what's happening in this issue. These are the things we have to have. This is the stuff we're still dealing with thematically, and he and I will then discuss story stuff. And then he'll start proposing, okay, you know, well, ooh, I could do this visual. So then I will tailor the script to what he and I have discussed, right? Then he sits down and he goes to work on the pages. But as he's going to work on the pages, he's, you know, everything on the pages. Balloons are going to go here. Placement is here. These are the colors. These are my color notes. And apparently, like, he and Dave get on the phone for hours. I mean, hours. And each of them with, I guess, the files on their computers in front of them, as I understand it. And they've got, you know, they do their little cross settings. And then they sit there and they tweak everything, you know, that... And then, like, is what I was telling John, then you see the printed page, and he's like, no, it didn't reproduce right. And I'm like, what do you mean it didn't reproduce right? It's red. You know, it's red. It's just, the whole book, and in that I include Tully, you know, and I include Laura, and also now Dave McCaig is going to be doing colors, or is doing the colors for the question backups. It's the most collaborative comic I've ever worked on.
That's really cool, man. And really speaking quickly about the question backup, man, I really think now that the story is really running and everything, that is becoming its own compelling thing. It's these co-features are excellent. And I think, you know, you are getting a full meal when you pick up a Detective Comics these days.
I hope so, considering how much we're charging for it.
Yeah, well, it's worth that extra buck. And you're working on a few of these books that are tied into a few of these books that the co-features are being used really well. And I think in the entire Superman series, we're starting to see how important the Captain Atom backups are. And maybe that's a good time to lead into, you know, out of Detective and into the Superman world that you're working on, both in Action Comics and World of New Krypton. And, you know, I guess, I wanted to ask you, and I don't know if you know this or John is probably a good one. Are you the first writer to be handling Action and Detective at the same time?
I have no idea.
That's a good question.
I suppose if I had a greater sense of history, I would find out. My sneaking suspicion is Denny O'Neill did it first, because I think he's done everything first.
You know,
there was a period a couple years ago where I had a Batman, a Superman, and a Wonder Woman title going at the same time.
Yeah.
And there was a minor event around that going, ooh, look, he's writing all three at once. And it was like, not the first time it's ever happened. Witness Denny O'Neill.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm certainly the first guy to be writing Action Comics without Superman in it, and Detective Comics without Batman. But that hands down, I can claim, and you know, but the rest, I don't know, man.
But like,
you know, and then.
No, you go. Oh, I was going to just throw in a compliment and say, much like Brubaker on Captain America and having the cast of characters that he has in that book, and Cap's presence is still there in Action. You know, yeah, it's Nightwing and Flamebird's story, but you know, Big Blue is still in the you know, on everyone's minds and certainly part of the story. So,
yeah, no, and he's crucial. You know,
I mean,
well, and I said at the start, you know, you don't get a Nightwing and a Flamebird without a Superman example. And, you know, it's the pleasure of being able to sort of explore the impact of the character without the character being present. And at the same time, you know, I get to work with James over on World of New Krypton. So I do get to write Superman, which is, you know, writing Superman is always, of all of them, he's the one who intimidates me the most, because he, to me, comes with such weight. You know, you've got to do him right, and especially in the World of New Krypton stuff, where topically, or not, I guess topically is the wrong word, but at first blush, those things that make him Superman are no longer present. You know, you don't have the costumes, and he's, you know, in a world of peers. Everybody's got the same set of powers that he does.
Yeah, but you guys have done a fantastic job of explaining why Superman is Superman, and it doesn't have I mean, it has something to do with his Kryptonian roots, but only genetically. I mean, he's Superman for a completely different set of reasons, and that, I think, is the underlying theme of that book right now.
Absolutely, and that is absolutely one of the things that we've been trying to explore, is that, you know, it's not the powers that make this guy Superman, so...
Well, the other fun thing, too, is just watching the Kryptonian society being fleshed out and the turns that this story is taking. I mean, we are now into Codename Assassin, so it's, I think, safe enough to talk about, you know, the oh shit moment of Zod being shot. Mm-hmm. And also this change in Zod.
Yeah, which, that's what I wonder. I've absolutely loved what you've done with Zod and making him such a more complex character and not just this, you know, villain. I mean, he's a hero, you know, on Krypton, new Krypton, and he's a much more complex character to the point where even, you know, Superman is sort of re-examining his relationship with him, or re-examining sort of their past together, and how that, you know, moving forward, how that's going to be, and then I can't remember.
Ursa's
fascinating character.
Great story in the annual, man, about Ursa's past. That was fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when I did the Action Annual, a lot of the pages that we ended up using for the Ursa story and the Secret Files were from the Action Annual and had to be cut because I had written the story that, you know, they gave me 40 pages, I think, for the annual, and I wrote a story that was like 60 pages long.
Uh-oh. Oops.
This is not going to fit. But that was one of the things that we very intentionally wanted to sit down and do, you know, was to look at Zod and look at Ursa and look at Non. And like so many things in the Superman books, all this stuff, for me, comes out of conversations with Jeff. Mm-hmm. You know, Jeff Johns laid groundwork, and he and I would talk, and, you know, he had proposed the how Non ended up the way Non was. Mm-hmm. And the second he told me that, this was, I think, before even the story had run, the second he told me that, I found that I had to re-examine Ursa and Zod. I had to look at the whole relationship differently, because you're talking about a horrible injustice to a man, and you're looking, it becomes more and more compelling. I think that for your villains to work, and Zod is a villain, you know, we're not going to, he will always remain a villain, but hopefully he becomes a villain that you understand,
yep,
and that you can see the pathos in. He's a, you know, you don't become a general on Krypton. You don't become the leader of the armed forces unless you've earned it somehow. Mm-hmm. And from that point, if nothing else, we had to go, look, he's a patriot. Everything he's doing, he is doing because he believes it is the best thing for his people and his planet. And one of the things that actually we've been trying to sort of draw across the Superman line is there's a very direct parallel between Zod and General Lane.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's very clearly going to be coming to a head some point soon. Yeah.
Well, you had mentioned talking with Jeff Johns about this. Now, between yourself and Johns and James Robinson and Sterling Gates, and I'm not even including the art team, which I think is pretty involved in this as well. Do you guys not have like a 52 relationship with this? But are you guys
it's actually kind of close to the 52 relationship.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not nearly as consistently high pressure, mm-hmm, but there is very much that level of communication and collaboration. We have a conference call just about every week, and it invariably runs close to 2 hours, and it covers everything. And we end up talking about what we're doing in each book and how the books are interacting and where we want the stories to go and, you know, bits and pieces. My September issue of Action is co-written with Sterling, mm-hmm, as is the September issue of Supergirl. And then through October, because Codename Patriot ends with something that has a fallout, and you know, we end up working on that together, and that's been fantastic. I mean, I didn't know Sterling at all when I came on to action, and I think he's terrific. He's fantastic to work with.
He's writing the first Supergirl book that I have ever aggressively looked forward to reading every month.
I think he and Jamal too.
Yeah.
I think they're doing a great job on that book. So.
Yeah, I don't know who was writing it, but I think Bob Oeschger, wasn't that his name back in the 70s? I think that's the last time I paid attention to Supergirl this closely before Jamal and Sterling were on it. And you guys write together so well, and we've already seen that in the annual, in the Secret Files, so that's been really neat to see.
Picking up on Supergirl, her mother, Allura,
right? Allura.
One of the things I was wondering if, and I obviously have no idea where the whole, you know, new Krypton storylines going or anything, but one of the sort of interesting things I thought I picked up on with that was, or at least I thought about a little bit, was, you know, her sort of mentality. You know, at first look, she's sort of this kind of bitchy character, but when I started thinking about it, I'm like, you know, her entire, you know, the last however many years, she's been trapped in a bottle, and her whole civilization has been trapped in a bottle. And the thought of that and the effect that would have on a civilization that is now free, that is now, you know, and then, like, all of a sudden she made sense to me. Like, yeah, well, she's not going to let anybody, you know.
Well, and look at the timeline, right? You know, for Allura, she saw Krypton. Well, Brainiac came, and they all knew about Brainiac, right? So the planet got attacked and screwed. They could do nothing.
Right.
You know, they could do nothing. And then Krypton explosion. So all of a sudden we're all that's left, right? We're Argo. And then Brainiac comes back.
Right.
And he doesn't kill all of you. He just selectively culls the Argo population, and then he puts them in with this other collection that he has, and you're living in this stasis thing. And you don't, you're in a bottle, you know, metaphorically, right? the little shrunken can door.
Mm-hmm.
But your life is not shrunken. You just, you know, you are an ant in an ant farm.
Right.
And you have the crushing weight of going, and I'm the only ant, you know, me and these other 999,000 ants, you know, that's it. That's the 99,000, I should say. You know, that's it. We're all that is left of our civilization. We're all that is left of a civilization that has spanned eons, that was at one point a mighty empire. And then add to that, and I lost my daughter.
Right, yeah.
And then we get restored, and we're brought back on this planet. And what's the first thing that happens? My husband's murdered. I think I would be dealing with a lot. I think that's an awful lot to ask any person to process.
Sure.
You know, so.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I definitely thought about that and sort of just the effect of that on a culture, you know, what it would do to that. But it was interesting how you just, you know, talking about how they were once a mighty empire and thinking about James Robinson being a Brit and how I wonder if that's sort of bled in at all. Sure. To that, you know, I don't know, but
yeah.
It's just sort of, you know, England being that mighty empire at one point and not so much anymore, or at least, you know, one.
I'm not sure that's a parallel that he's working with actively.
subconsciously.
Maybe subconsciously it's, you know, in there. I don't know.
Well, and I also love just the inclusion of a Daxam. And that, you know, that kind of Romulan Vulcan relationship that the two planets now share. And, you know,
go,
I don't know if it was
to go really
there.
Nerdy, honest,
but it, no, but it really, it does it. It opens up the story. And that's why it's like, you know, the whole thing with the Black Lanterns, that's really interesting, but you know, the Daxamites are all sitting out there.
Well, yeah.
And you still got 100,000 Kryptonians. So, you know,
yep.
Things are fun, you know, exactly, man.
That's a very knowing, that's a very knowing,
storm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not
to speculate or anything, but Jeff is working on another series that has all of these suddenly superpowered Daxamites, and there's a whole new world of Krypton, so we're thinking that there might be a collision in the future.
You think that there might be a conflict coming?
Perhaps.
I mean, where are you seeing that from?
I
don't see it. I can't imagine why, for instance, anybody on Earth would be nervous about the thought of 100,000 supermen on a planet in an opposite state, you know, geosynchronous orbit or whatnot. I can't imagine that anybody's staying up late at night worrying about the inevitable conclusion of that collision of cultures.
Certainly not a military man either.
No.
Certainly not. Nor would, say, you know, a mad genius who feels that Superman has always been the greatest threat to humanity and he has always been humanity's greatest savior. Can't imagine that's occupying any of his time either. So.
Well, let's
make that what you will.
You mean Lex might make an appearance in this whole thing, perhaps?
Well, he has. Yeah.
A little bit.
Before he was shot.
And that's why with apologies to Death of Superman writers, artists, and fans, and other great epic Superman stories of the past, I really think this story in its scope, you know, could be the biggest Superman story all is said and done. And I think that's really neat. And we're getting it at a really cool time because there have been visits back to Kryptonian society hundreds of times during the Jerry Siegel years, during the Weisinger years. And now we are getting it from a more adult perspective. And honestly, it's a lot of fun reading Superman right now.
Oh, the Superman family, not just Superman, the whole family.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've read so many Superman comics over the years, and this really is a permutation that has never been done. I mean, even in the imaginary stories where Kandor would be enlarged, they would always, you know, write them out of things by putting them on deliberately on a planet with a red sun where, you know, they could act as normally as they did. No one ever did anything like this. And it's really fascinating to see how it plays out, and certainly never with characters as dynamic and as interesting as Zod having a leadership role in that society.
But on another note, really, how lovely is Kate Beckinsale's hair?
I think it's a wig.
Hey, we had mentioned James Robinson a couple times. We were very lucky to meet James at a signing and then party that ended up turning into like 3 a.m. karaoke at some weird Korean bar here in Chicago. And I got to spend some really fun times with James over that evening. And one of the things that I remember him talking about was this is just as World on New Krypton had started. And he, you know, I told him that we had talked with you on the show several times and that you were a friend of the show. And he looks at me, he's like, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like riding with Greg because I didn't really know him. And then he went on to tell me what an absolute pleasure it had been up into that point of writing this with you and how good of a time he was having with it. And
it's been a terrific collaboration. I think both he and I, because there's this myth that everybody in the industry knows everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I had never spoken to the guy, you know, until we had like our first couple conversations. And, you know, World of New Krypton we weren't supposed to write it. It was supposed to be, I forget his name. He ended up going into the writer's room on Fringe, and he couldn't. I want to say Andrew Kreisberg, right?
Oh, does
that
Kreisberg,
sound right?
Yeah.
And the second that happened, we were all looking at, you know, we have this plan, and we know what this book needs to be, and who are we going to get to write it? And we were all on the phone, and James and I were both like, well, we could do it together. And then there was this awkward pause. I was like, can we really? You know, we don't know each other. It's kind of like, you know, in many ways, it's like, hi, I've just met you. Would you like to be my roommate? You know, this could go really bad. So, but he's,
I'm sorry. I was just going to make a joke. I think that's what Chris said to you when he first met you.
Oh, hush.
I couldn't help it.
You guys are so mean to him.
No. Thank you.
See, don't worry. That's why I keep saying it. I'm comfortable making fun of him because Greg understands and understands Chris. So it's really all in jest. It's all in jest.
But no, I mean, James and I, the guy's a machine. He's just, he's got so many ideas. Just, you get on the phone with him. Like I said, we have these conference calls, and we all sort of wait for James to start, you know? And then he just, he goes, and out come 15 things that he's been thinking about in the past week. And that always starts the discussion, you know, which one we're like, okay, well, this, and what about that, and this. Yeah. We had this fascinating discussion just, you know, this yesterday, that I can't say anything about, but it was one of these things where I can't, because I can't give anything
but
away.
But it was awesome.
It was one of those things where we had talked about this. There was a thing we were eventually planning on doing. And DiDio had, I guess, seen our overview and had talked to Idelson and came back to Idelson and said, you know, Dan really wants us to do this. So we were talking about it. And we were like, well, you know what, but that's kind of expected. How can we make it out? Ooh, we could do this. And next thing I know, you know, I'm sitting there on the phone doing Google searches for these terms, trying to figure out the actual scientific implications of doing the thing that we're talking about and what the ramifications would be, and reading off, you know, reading off math equations to the guys, and they're like, and I can hear them all there as their eyes are crossing and they're glazing over, except for James, who's going, that's great, that's terrific, we've got to do that, you know?
That's cool. Well, and I would imagine too, Greg, because I know when we first spoke about this, you said that, you know, James was kind of letting you think about, or leading you to think about, Krypton and the way Superman stories can be told in ways you never thought of before. And I would
absolutely,
and I would think absolutely, in general, that kind of collaboration has to be opening your mind.
Very much. And it's just, it's energizing. You know, when you work with good people, it inspires you and it forces you to raise your game. You can't sleep through it. So,
yeah, I remember him briefly, and I'm paraphrasing him, talking about collaborating with you on part of the story with the Thought Beast, right? The Thought, and he's like, you know, Greg is a very strategic writer, and he's, you know, about putting, you know, A to B to C together and making everything work. And I'm like, Greg, Thought Beast, think about it, Thought Beast.
But that's exactly it. I mean, I can get, you know, I love the details, and I can get very obsessed with them, and in doing so, I get microscopic. I will focus on small things to the detriment of the larger story. So working with James is really good, because James is always like, "No, it's a Superman story, for God's sakes! It's got to be bigger."
Thought Beast, you Greg. Know? Thought Beast.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly it.
But at the same time, I think you both have a quality in your writing that that works so well together, is that you both think about character first. It seems. I mean, talking to both of you and reading your work, you both seem to go at it in that way of you both really think about characters.
There's no two-dimensional characters.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
No, I think we're both character-based. We're not plot-based.
Yeah.
But I do think that James has a much more developed sense of comic book spectacle than I do. You know, I've always, like, I'm more comfortable writing Gotham Central and the Batman books and Queen and Country and things like that. I'm more comfortable with stories where if you shoot somebody with a gun, the odds are they're going to die. Yeah. You know,
they're not coming back.
And you just want to describe how they die. That's how they feel when they die.
I admit that I think there's some merit to that. Yes.
No doubt.
Well, I shoot Chase in the new novel.
Oh,
and
spoilers!
You know, and
I've been,
oh yeah, and I've been doing, and it's the same problem I always get myself into whenever I shoot anybody, which is bullets kill people. so you have to work. I feel you have to work fairly hard to justify why they're not immediately dead. You know, it's like, or at least dead within 10 minutes. You know, and I need her to basically live for several days after she's wounded. So, you know, I've been doing a ridiculous amount of medical research going, like, well, if I shoot her here, I do this and this and this. And it's not stuff that's actually going to end up in the book. It's just for my purposes to know, is it plausible? Can I do it? Right. And if so, if I understand the material enough, then I will be able to relay just enough to sell it, you know? Mm-hmm. But, I spend way too much time on that stuff. Absolutely. I can go on about this for hours, but I will restrain myself except to say the following. You know, I have a friend who is going to be going to Afghanistan very shortly to train people. And he and I have had many discussion about how, you know, the bullet, when it enters you, doesn't care. You know, it's like when it's fired from the gun, if it is rifled, it will fly straight and true. And then it hits you. And then it goes inside. And then it goes, all bets are off. I'm turning left now. I'm going to bounce off of this. I'm going to spin and cut through this. I will enter in your mid-thigh, and I will exit on the same side through your chest. That's terrifying. I mean, you know, and this is why I tend to get really annoyed when people get shot in movies and then they just keep going. You know, it's like, no, well, your arm just came out. That was an M16. It tore your arm off.
Can I ask you a question on you know, the idea that you, you know, you feel sometimes you get microscopic about things and you can get maybe mirrored in the research end of things. Any tips on how to get out of that, on how to get past that?
Yeah, I think that you've got to, everything you do is in service of the story you're telling. And that becomes the litmus. Is the information in service of it, or is it going to bog it down? The worst thing that can happen in a story is to do something in a story that kicks the reader out, be that movie or TV or whatnot. It's like, you know, if any of us sits down and we watch a show from the 70s, you know, early 70s, and the bad guy has a revolver with a silencer on it, and we all go, no, and you leave. You know, you are out of the story. You could have been there up until then. And that's the goal. The goal is, you know, any research you do, the truth, I find that if you do good research will give you good story. But there will always come a time at which, you know, at which you have to go, okay, you have to leave the research behind, because if you continue going, well, this is what would really happen, you end up with a really dull story. And other times, if you continue with the research, you will find things that people would not believe. that if you did them, people would be like, that's bullshit. You made that
right,
up.
Right.
And you're like, no, it's real. I mean, honest to God, truth is so much stranger than fiction.
I mean, I think that's why, like, I think Moby Dick is a great story, but the book is impenetrable to me because he clearly learned everything there is to know about whaling in New England and just had to share it with you.
You know, if you'd asked me about this 15 years ago, I probably could have very eloquently defended why Melville felt it was necessary to put in all the whaling chapters.
Yeah.
And at this point, I forget that there was actually an argument. I love that book. I remember reading it in college and getting it. And it isn't simply that he's putting the material there to go, and now the history of whaling, part 373, the narwhal. You know, it is structurally and thematically significant. But for the life of me, I can't remember why. this is somewhere my parents just twitched violently, going, "That was a liberal arts education wasted." You know.
Hey, but you got a movie coming out.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Talking about more realistic stuff, and we touched on Queen and Country for a second. Oh, we will come back to Queen and Country.
I was expecting that.
Oh, we will.
I'm amazed we got this far.
But don't worry, we're coming back. You have a new detective series coming out that you have been teasing us with for about, since Whiteout got optioned, called Stumptown. And is it solicited?
Yeah.
Yes.
Solicited this August for October release.
Nice. And
preview pages
issue
are out.
One, the girl who left her shampoo.
Interesting.
Wow. Okay, Rockford.
Beautiful Matthew Selworth art.
Yes, Matthew Selworth art and Mr. Lee Loughridge colors. So color book from Omi Press.
Oh, it's colored now. Oh, yeah. Now, see, all the previews I've seen have been black and white.
That's right.
They looked wonderful.
It's the big surprise.
Ooh.
There you go. And actually, let's see. We can give you the phone number. It's 503-389-2135. And if you call, you can get a little preview of what Stumptown is.
Sweet. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, Jim Rockford, look at you.
Oh, yep.
Very nice.
Absolutely.
And nice.
This is this is nothing but a really self-indulgent love letter to the Rockford Files.
All right. And which I can't understand, and Simon and Simon, correct?
Yeah, I give
Simon
a shit about
Simon
that, too.
And Magnum.
Mm-hmm. Magnum, all Magnum's that, all right.
Yeah, everyone loves Magnum.
All that stuff that I watched as a kid.
I'm sure
it
just,
wasn't necessarily good.
Hey, man, I understand, too. But, yeah, really, Rick and AJ is where we part ways. That's the only, you know.
Hey, look, like I said, and if you've seen, like, the other interview, it's not that I love Simon and Simon. It's that there was one episode that stays in my mind.
I understand.
You know, I know nothing else about the episode. I just know that it begins with, you know, AJ playing like squash with some guy in a racquetball, and then some guy opens fire on them with a submachine gun from the gallery, and kills the guy that he's playing with. And AJ, you know, you can't do it. If you've been on a racquetball court, it's a box. Where are you going to go? Where are you going to go? And he ends up, you know, huddled in a corner, terrified, because there's nothing he can do. All he can do is lie there and go, please don't kill me. And I remember, you know, I was 10, you know, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, that would be really scary, you know. You guys laugh, but you guys all had moments like that.
Oh, come on, man. You know, everyone has a crappy show in their background. Don't worry about it.
Well,
that's cool.
It's not the crappy show. It's that moment when you realize something that was perfectly obvious to everybody else, you know?
Oh, okay,
And you realize the emotional truth in it. And Simon and Simon may have been a horrible show. I haven't rewatched it. I really cannot say. But that moment was a true moment. You know, for me, that was a true moment, in the same way that, you know, that moment in Magnum when he turned around, you know, Ivan, did you see the sunrise? Boom! And he blows him away. And I was like, oh my God, he killed him! You guys don't do that! Holy shit! My 14-year-old brain is broken! I went to school the next day. I went to every one of my friends, did you see Magnum last night? And they were like, oh my God, yes! My brain is broken!
I think that happened to me.
And again, if you didn't experience it at the right place in the right time, all it is, wow, Rucka's fucked up. But if you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. It is that realization, I think, especially for writers, especially for people who get interested in drama, of seeing suddenly, wait a minute, there are different stories, and stories that can go in ways you never imagined. You know, because we grow up, I'm watching it with my son. You know, he's 9 and a half, and he's been surrounded by narrative his whole life. His parents are writers, you know. And he now expects certain things from narrative. So if you show him what he expects, and then the story, you know, zigs when he thought it was going to zag, you watch his little mind go pop.
That's cool.
And he sits there and he goes, oh, that was so cool.
So you're training a writer then, huh?
I don't know what I'm training. He wants to be an animator, actually.
Interesting. So, that's cool.
He wants to be an animator, though I've been accused of trying to train a superhero.
That's
he's into parkour at 9. He's into free running. and he's doing competitive gymnastics. So, and his sister is doing gymnastics and ballet. So actually what I'm really doing is I'm training my crack squad of cat burglars.
I know you're training minders.
nice. Is before you get to, because obviously that's an end to Queen and Country, but before you do,
I was going to say there's a segue.
but I have to. I'm curious. With a 10-year-old current Robin currently running around in the Bat Universe, is Dash aware of that?
No, Elliot.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Elliot's thing right now, all black is night all the time.
Okay.
All black.
Interesting.
He doesn't even know what I'm writing. You know, I think he's aware. Oh, new Krypton. I'll read that later, Dad. It's the new Blackest Night out.
Zombies.
Very
good.
Cool.
I mean, he is totally taken with everything that's going on in the Green Lantern universe.
Me too.
And Dashiell, you know, she could care less.
Oh, I'm okay.
She's you know, Dashiell 6, and she's, you know, I want to watch Wizards of Waverly Place. No! Here, Phineas and Ferb. Watch Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah, there you go.
Phineas and Ferb is good.
Yeah,
Phineas and Ferb is awesome.
No, I agree with you, man. No, there are cool kids shows. It's just you got to find them. That's all, man.
Yeah. Wizards of Waverly Place, not one of them.
Not one of them.
So, all right, in my opinion.
So before
you're gonna get hate, I'm gonna get hate mail now. Wizards of Waverly Place is the greatest television show since Simon and Simon.
didn't Simon and Simon and Magnum, didn't they share a universe? There were some crossovers.
They did crossovers. So did Murder, She Wrote, and Magnum.
That I remember. Yeah. I remember Jessica.
Which means Simon and Simon shared, you know, which makes you wonder why all the PIs didn't go to Crabapple Cove and say, Jessica Thatcher, you did it. You know.
Because Jerry Conway wouldn't let them.
Yeah, well, I expect that.
That's right.
Okay, so Stumptown, just great detective comics. Yeah.
And it's not this noir thing. I think people are expecting, I saw somebody say, you and Brubaker separated at birth, you know, and he's doing Criminal, now you're doing Stumptown. I'm like, yeah, but you know what Criminal is? Criminal is, you know, Ed's perhaps unnatural love for the, you know, early 70s crime, really, I think is the thing that informs that most. And it's that post, you know, Vietnam noir sense, hyper-violent. And Stumptown isn't noir. Stumptown is a PI show.
Yeah.
There are elements that are noir. But it is as much about the characters as it is about the case, if that makes sense.
Yeah. His is 1940s film, yours is 1982 primetime TV.
There you go.
Have you seen Castle at all? The Nathan Fillion show?
I have not. And
it's good.
But it has been highly recommended to me by my friend Nunzia DeFilippis and his wife, Christy Weir. They were like, you have to watch Castle. I have been watching Leverage.
Oh, I like
which Leverage. I think is fantastic. I love Leverage. I think John Rogers has a, you know, he and Dean Devlin have a fantastic show there, and I'm delighted by it every time I see it. So
check out Castle. Sal got me turned on to it, and first of all, Nathan Fillion is fantastic. But it's a smart little detective. Well,
he's a writer. He's a mystery writer who gets involved in cops.
The way it was explained to me was and I think somebody said if you're doing your spiritual inheritor of the Rockford Files, this is the spiritual inheritor of Remington Steele.
Oh.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I was going to say Murder, She Wrote to some degree too, but Remington Steele, I could see that too.
Yeah, it's good.
Leverage though is just one of these great basic cable shows though, and I really think they've got this edge over the air, you know, television now, where they're able to come with these smart shows and also get a commitment of 13 episodes that you're not going to get from the Big Five.
Right, and then deliver. I think that mode ensures quality, frankly.
Absolutely.
I think that allows them to, you know, really bust their humps and do, okay, we're going to do the 13 best goddamn episodes we can do.
Yeah, they're mini movies. They really are.
Everybody knows the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with the fingers crossed. Everybody knows that the war is over. Everybody knows that the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight is fixed.
Stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. All right. Let's talk some serious business here.
Good Lord.
Queen of Country, how's this novel coming along?
Get better.
He's like your editor, man. How many pages?
I did not have a good day on Thursday. Yesterday, you know, I was going to have to fly down to L.A. I got up at like 5 in the morning so I could get in some serious writing time. I wrote for 8 hours and I only produced 2,000 words that I was happy with, which for me is not good. In that amount of time, I should have been able to put out at least 5, and I'd like to be averaging more than that. But that's mostly because, you know, I'm trying to make sure everything fits right, and I'm having sort of an internal war with myself about, God forgive me, artistry. You know, if you read Walking Dead, if you read the last Kodiak novel, you can see there's a change in the prose style, especially at the start. It reads a little differently than the previous Kodiak novels have. Mm-hmm. And for the last run, again, you know, I'm trying to do more with the language. And I think I've been hurting myself because if you've ever read any of you guys ever read, and I'm sure the answer is going to be a resounding what, but the Patrick O'Brien Aubrey Mattern novels. These are the books that they made Master and Commander.
No, but I'm certainly aware of Master and Commander.
I saw the movie.
Doesn't really help.
great movie.
O'Brien, you know, wrote these novels, and his language is very rich. And I've been reading them, and that's messing with my head. Because I'm like, I don't write like that. And it's not like I'm trying to, but I'm aware at the back of my brain there's a little voice going, you know, Patrick O'Brien would make that sound so much nicer. And I have to tell the little voice to shut up. And if it doesn't shut up soon, I may have to take drastic measures such as bourbon.
That's there's nothing drastic about that. That's
completely natural.
Yeah, boy, I feel better. Gee, thanks. Thanks, Jim Beam. It's nice to hear that.
I have some nice recommendations for you if you're ever interested. But no, yeah, and you know, you're dealing with Brits, and I can see how that can actually be a natural inclination to flower up the language, but you've always been pretty good at not doing that. Of one of the best or I think most heartfelt compliments, and I don't know if I've ever passed this along to you. One of my best friends is from London, lives here in Chicago, and I had him read Gentleman's Game. And
because he will not be friends with someone unless they read that.
It's like, we can't be friends unless you read this, then get back to me. But no, he read it, actually had his parents, who are Londoners, read it, and they could not believe that you were from Portland.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's good. I did my research job.
The
problem with this one is I'm in Tehran.
Okay.
And it's hard to get good, accurate information about Iran for some strange reason. So that has been stretching the research engine, and then of course you know I go to. I've got one guy in particular that I tend to go to for black bag stuff where I go, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, and I think I would do this, this, and this. And, you know, he'll come back and he'll say, well, you could do that and this, but then you could do this, 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 and this. And we end up on the phone. You know, we have conversations that I'm sure if they were being overheard would alarm people and all that. You know, it just... It pays off in the end, but it can be kind of tedious when what you want to do is be writing forward, and you're like, no, you gotta make sure you've got everything in place before you start typing, because otherwise you just end up wasting time.
I just think it's awesome that you have a guy that you talk black bag stuff with. That's cool.
Everybody should have a guy you talk black bag stuff with, man.
Is Troutman your gun guy?
No, Troutman's one of my gun guys.
Okay.
Troutman's one of my dirty tricks guys. He's not the dirty trick guy. But if I need something fast and dirty, and in particular tech, Troutman is almost always the first guy I go to.
He's your guy. Okay. All right.
And if I need explosives or, you know, intelligence maneuvering, dead drop clearing, you know, tradecraft stuff. I've got a couple guys I go to who I don't name. So,
nice. So, the Queen and Country comic series wrapped up with issue 32.
Yes.
And then there's the bridge novel.
Private Wars.
Private Wars, which will then lead into the new, as of yet unnamed novel.
No, it's named. It's called The Last Run.
Oh, The Last Run. Okay.
Yeah.
It's called
The Last Run.
Oh,
it's Chase's last run in the field.
Yeah, Tara's last one. Okay. And then you've already kind of dropped some hints that Tara's going to end up being D-Ops as we pick up the new comic series.
Yeah.
And we're looking at that 2011?
You're trying to extract a promise, Aaron.
Yes, I am.
It will depend on many factors, but yeah, that's what I'm shooting for.
All right, great.
One of the factors is actually Nicola Scott, frankly, because she and I have an agreement that she would draw the first arc of the second series.
Very cool.
Yeah. But of course, she can't be exclusive to DC when she does that.
You are going to get into you're going to have to drive down state and get into a big old fight with Gale on that one, maybe.
I'm not getting into a knife fight with Gale.
I was going to say knife fight. Nicola, exactly, man.
Nicola's a big girl. She can take care of herself. You know, once I was at the Wizard Chicago show several years back, and I was talking to Tim Sale, and Jeff Loeb walked up to me as I was talking to Tim Sale in the bar, and he said, I know what you two are trying to do. And he turned to me and he said, "You get away from him, you bitch. He's mine."
Wow. Wow. Yeah.
Hey, man.
Didn't know that about Loeb, did you?
I did.
I suspected.
Yes. Yeah. There are all suspicions all around.
But there's been whispers. Well, that's awesome. I think. Well, gosh, Nicola's been talking about doing a Q&C arc with you for about 3-4 years now. It's
That would be. I mean, that's the plan. Would be that she would do the first arc. So, but yeah, I mean, I think 2011 is reasonable.
Okay.
if the fates align, and you know, I don't blow out my brain or do something stupid, and yeah, I would like to do that.
Cool.
You know, there's a new screenwriter on the Q&C movie, and I think that we may actually have a Q&C movie soon. So
I was gonna go there.
Mr. Hollywood,
yeah, Ryan Condal. So,
have they decided potentially on an arc that they might base it on, or is that still in the planning stages?
No,
or?
Okay. No, they're not gonna. Well, again, you know, if you're talking about a movie. Right, and say you want $120 million that you're going to spend on the film. You need to justify that money on the screen, and they are by definition looking for bigger plots.
Okay.
You know? So, and
can we assume that I was going to say, can we assume that the first change they would make is it not being British?
No.
I would hope not. Queen of Country, for God's sake.
Well, I just don't know. I mean, you know, who knows? With Hollywood, they take something and...
Just keep
and...
Renee Zellweger away from it. That's my only... I can't
speak to it. I'm not involved.
Yeah, I know.
I know that Ryan is, you know, he is familiar with the source material, and he and I have exchanged several emails, and we met at San Diego, had a good chat, and I really like him. I think he's very smart. He clearly gets it. And he clearly wants to preserve, you know, the spirit of the material. And I think part of that spirit is that it's SIS, it's not the CIA.
Right.
I think that whatever draft he produces, you're going to see a Paul Crocker, and you're going to see a Tara Chase. And I think that frankly that's the core relationship of Queen and Country.
Mm-hmm.
The core relationship of Q&C is, you know, this D-Ops who is a right bastard at times. And this agent, who at times hates his guts, but you never doubt their commitment to one another.
Yeah, that, and it's incredibly important in that series to show not just the external threat, but the internal, and that's where you get
Crocker
and
Trace. Yeah, that's exactly. And I've actually had more than one meeting with executives where I've said, "What you have to understand when they say we don't know what we're doing," you know, I have said multiple times that every Queen and Country has two antagonists. There's always the terrorist who wants to blow up the school bus with the kids on it or whatever, and then there's Tara's own government.
Yeah.
There's the bureaucracy, and that's always the other antagonist, and Crocker serves to defend her against the one while putting her in the line of fire of the other.
That's what they do.
Yeah, that's what binds the relationship. And of course, you know, should we get to that second series of Q&C, you know, Chase is going to find herself in that position of having to fight the Whitehall battles where she sends, you know, this new, it's going to be, you're going to follow this new Minder 3 who is the unluckiest girl in the world because, you know, hey, I'm in the special section. Hooray, I'm Minder 3. Oh, my God, Tara Chase hates me. Because Chase is going to be, I did everything backwards and in high heels, and you have to do it better.
Yep.
Nice.
You know, she will be brutally intolerant of this woman.
If you had your choice, who would you cast for Crocker?
No idea.
No.
Crocker. My Crocker casting right now, Sean Bean.
Oh, that's interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Come on, you put him. You put him in. You put. Think. Actually, think about. Think about the whatever the airplane movie was with Jodie Foster.
Oh yeah.
Think about him in that. You know, him neatly cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
With a haircut and put him in a suit. And then you've got a guy that you can believe killed people with his bare hands 20 years ago or 15 years ago, but now is sitting behind a desk and you still don't want to fuck with him.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's Crocker.
He, I think, would be a terrific Crocker.
Who,
I have no idea who you get for Chase.
Who
no
is,
idea at
who
all.
Who's the gal the blonde from Coupling, the BBC version.
Oh, yeah.
I know who.
Sarah. Sarah something. And I.
Yeah, oh, she's
a doll. I don't remember her name, but she had been. Somebody had mentioned her to me as saying, you know, like she's a black belt in karate and she speaks like six languages and she really is Tara Jays. And I was like, well, that'd be fantastic, but I don't.
Yeah, yeah, she's like yeah. Young Honor Blackman. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
You know, absolutely.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Hi, I'm an executive at Fox.
Yeah. Who? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Can no, she I'm open a movie?
Renee Can Zellweger. She open a movie? Two words yeah. for you. It's three syllables. Renee Zellweger.
Four syllables. I don't think that's where they're going to go. My understanding is that there are actresses who are pursuing the role.
Cool.
I'm told that apparently they get calls and that there are different actresses who go, you know, is this part available? But you understand, you know,
Queen Lindsay Lohan like
5 years ago, and in that time, you know, the list changes. Sold so.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the book is, it gets play in interesting circles. I know that Blair Butler is a huge fan of it. And when Rachel Maddow is talking about how she loves your work, that's got to be kind of cool, right?
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't hear that. Fantastic, man.
Yeah, no, the greatest quote, this is going on my gravestone, is Rachel Maddow called me a genius.
Very cool.
Woohoo.
Woohoo. Yeah, she's one of the coolest kids in the class. I got to tell you, she's all right.
I'm there.
Yeah, no kidding.
That one, I don't think my dad has ever been prouder of me than when Rachel Maddow called me a genius. He was like, my son has arrived.
Greg, what do you think of some of the movies that have tried to tell the war on terror story in the last few years? And I can't remember that other Renee Zellweger, or no, it was, what's her face?
Well, you just hate Renee
Zellweger. No, it wasn't Renee Zellweger. It's the other one. It's Sweet Home in Alabama now, and I'm forgetting Renee Witherspoon. Reese Witherspoon. Yeah, she was in that kind of
rendition.
Yes, thank you, Josh. Exactly, rendition. Like, have you seen any of these? Or even, you know what I really want to see that just came out, this Ben Kingsley movie about the IRA in the 80s. That's
no, I haven't 50, seen it.
50 Dead Men or something like that.
Does Ben Kingsley play every ethnic group? Is that like...
Yes.
Like
I actually saw
one.
Him play Moses, and but he was very, very good.
He's Ben Kingsley. But
you know, not to get back on wigs, but the man puts a toupee on and he disappears in the character. He truly does. I mean, honestly, I forgot I was watching Ben Kingsley. It was great. He, you know, and also, God, that one, You Kill Me, the one where he was the Buffalo, New York Polish hitman and stuff. The guy's amazing. He can do it all.
He right. should play Tara Chase.
Exactly. Give him some falsies. Cracker. Give him a blonde wig, cracker. And there he is. I'm playing Tara
I'm
Chase.
Sure he can open it.
All right. We have covered World on New Krypton, Whiteout, Stumptown, Detective? Action Comics, Detective Comics, Queen and Country. Sir, could you add like three or four more things to your plate? We need more to talk about.
We got the novels, too. Don't forget the novels.
The novels.
We just hit the novels.
Oh, well.
No, I don't want to add anything else.
Yeah, he's tired, man. I know he's tired.
You know, we've been talking with you for about 3 years, three and a half years. I've never known you to not have about eight different plates spinning at the same time. I think that you thrive on this really hectic schedule.
Either that or I just don't know, you know, I don't take a hint. I just have a really slow learning curve. It's one or the other.
So you have to learn to say no. But man, it's amazing that you do as much work as you do and keep it at such an incredibly high level. And
thanks for always making time for us.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, no, it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. I really do appreciate it. And honest to God, it's you know I. Nobody wants to work in a vacuum, and it's always so gratifying, you know, to be able to talk to people who are excited about what I'm doing. So,
just about every week we're excited because you're doing that much work, and we appreciate it. Always you spending time. You guys have any other questions for Greg here?
I think we should let the man
rest.
Rest.
Yeah, really, man. You're going to be in the blender until Whiteout comes
right.
out. So.
We rest. We know he's going to go write something.
You're not going to bed. You're going to go kiss Jen on the cheek and say, okay, I need that last 3,000 words of Queen and Country today.
Yeah, you know what? you guys are actually right.
Quickly, best to Jen for a great job on the Marvel 70th anniversary.
Awesome. Yeah.
Cool. I will pass it on.
That was fantastic.
And the
you
artist.
Got some stuff coming, too.
Excellent.
Oh, great.
Well, there's an excuse for me to talk to Jen soon on Word Balloon again, so that's excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tell her I would love to see she and Annie McDonald work on something again. They were a great writer-artist team on that. It's fantastic.
I will absolutely pass that on, man.
Yeah, fantastic Marvel 70th issue. That was on the Miss America,
yeah,
right?
Miss America. I keep wanting to say Miss USA, but it's Miss America, yeah.
Yeah, Miss Marvel, Miss America. It was fantastic. Yeah. And people
my favorite moment in that story is when the Vichy Vixen and surrenders.
Yep. And folks, whenever the Black Lightning miniseries comes out in trade, which
hopefully
we'll pick that sucker up because she and Cully just
knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, kicked the shit out of that story. It was awesome.
So. Cool.
All right, Greg, thank you so much. You have a great rest of your evening, and hopefully we will we'll catch up with you here before the end of the year, man.
Congratulations on everything, but especially, you know, the movie. I'm sure that's, you know, got to be thrilling for you, and couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Thank you very much.
I hope it's a box office hit.
Me too.
All right. Have a great night, man. Thank you so much.
You guys too. Have a great evening. Finish your Jim Beam. Talk to
you later. All right.
I already finished.
All right. Night, Greg.
Good night, guys.
All right, there you go, Mr. Greg Rucka, and what's going on? It's never done, Sal. No, we're gonna wrap this one up real quick. Big thanks to Greg Rucka as always, and go check out all those books. A guy that does Superman and street level detective and espionage, and he's everything the guy does is so good. And it's kind of an in joke on the show, but he is one of my favorite writers, one of my favorite people.
Well, and I would agree independently. I'm as much of a fan and enjoy his work. And the great thing about him not only working with James and expanding his mind from a Superman standpoint, the stuff in Detective, and maybe it is working with J.H., this is a Greg Rucka that I am unfamiliar with in a good way. Yes, it is a straight-up good crime story, but it is this, you know, surreal atmosphere that J.H. and the art and the story are providing. That this is a very lyric Greg Rucka that I am not used to. And the guy keeps up in his game with every new big project that comes around.
He doesn't stagnate. He does not stagnate. Always doing new stuff and pushing the envelope, which is great.
I think he might have spent a little time with Morrison when they were working on
52.
And that maybe is kind of coming. He keeps definitely expanding what he does. He's a good writer and a heck of a guy.
Well, I think working with someone like J.H. Williams, who is I think is the best artist working in superhero comics today. Oh. I think that he does everything, and you know, to keep up with someone like Alan Moore doing Alan Moore's craziest story ever in Promethea.
Oh my god!
And now, I think Greg has to be, you know, as he said, there's a very collaborative process where it's like, what do you want? How can I give it to you? And is giving him the material to draw an amazing bat. I mean, and it looks better than like. And I Quietly's easily my second favorite artist, superior artist. And it J.H. Williams is just knocking him on his ass every week.
Oh, it's A and A plus. You know, I said a couple episodes ago. If you're not reading Detective and Batman and Robin, you are not reading the two most awesome looking books in comics right now.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. It is so easy with this big Dick Grayson story that's going on in all the other Batman books.
You said big dick.
Yeah. Thank you. That's always bring it back to the common denominator. Very nice. Good job.
Well
I
done,
like it.
Sir. Well
but,
played.
But truly, big dick aside, really, no, it is so easy to dismiss this Batwoman story, and especially with the stumbles that DC had when they were first introducing the character, pulling her away, and now we're finally getting her real story, and the stage is set for her. If you're not reading it, just like Chris said, you're really missing a great, great story.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, that's it. There's a little
the love Chris, fest is over.
I was gonna
over.
Say Chris needs to like get a cigarette now. Yeah, oh, and, yeah. I need to Calgon take me away.
I need to go home and spend some alone time. No. yeah, this is a little extra episode in the middle of the week. Actually, I think I'm gonna release this guy on September 19th. We'll release this on the day that Whiteout opens.
That's September 11th, actually. So you might.
Well, oh, what
the,
did I say?
The 19th is
September 19th is
that's when
burnt,
the city comes
burnt into my head. So yeah, September 11th is when Whiteout comes out. September 19th good. Is whenever the Windy City Comic Con rolls into Chicago.
Whiteout looks pretty cool.
Looks great. Yeah, no,
I've never read it. I've actually still have never read Whiteout. So but it looks cool.
Give you my looks copy. Cool.
It I'll is, just see the movie. I don't need to read the book. Oh, sorry, no, Greg. I'm just kidding. I was just kidding.
You got to compare, man.
All right. Everyone have a fantastic rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. I want to thank Mr. John Suntress.
My pleasure.
Mr. Brian Salazar.
Yes.
Mr. Josh Elder.
Good being here as always.
Our very special guest, Mr. Greg Rucka. And, of course, Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It is just about midnight.
Oh, so Christ, what am I doing here?
Let's turn this one off and get out of here. In the meantime.
In between
time. In your ass.
We'll be everywhere in.
And around Greg Rucka. Because we can't help it.
We can't. Conversation. All
right. Well, it's over very soon. And I watch in admiration from my corner of the room.
Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and may not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Any reproduction, rebroadcast, or retransmission without the express written consent of Around Comics is strictly prohibited. All content presented in this program is the sole property of Around Comics, and this has been an Around Comics production, copyright 2009.
These little conversations, if I try my very best, you know I never could say. 20 words or less. Somewhere, sometime down the line, someday I may confess and tell you all. That's all. With a little conversation. Well, I'm being very rough.
Hey, has there ever been a more precipitous drop than from hanging around Kate Beckinsale to talking to Chris Niesman and like the history of all culture?
Yeah, no, nice Twitter picture, man. Jesus.
Oh, the stories I could tell.
Well, oh, Chris Niesman. I told Chris the Hindenburg had a more steady drop than what you're experiencing this evening. But Greg,
51 brought to you by InStockTrades.com and Netflix.
And Whiteout.
And Whiteout.
Brought to you by Whiteout.
Oh, there you go.
Whiteout. Did they pay you?
No, but they sent us a big old box of awesome Whiteout carabiners.
That's right. I haven't seen the carabiners.
Have they really?
Are you very cool. Are you serious? They were
serious.
They were at San Diego, man.
Well, I don't know what to tell you, man. You know, at San Diego, I don't know about the rest of you guys, but I work.
I was going
to
say, gets blindfolded, thrown out of a van, do this panel.
You don't run around and collect, you know, tchotchkes from the different publishers and movies?
Listen to the goyim say tchotchke, Greg. You didn't like that? I like that. Jared, like fall halfway through.
You're Greek.
I hung with the Chosen as a child. Man. I went to more
the Chosen.
I went to more bar mitzvahs than confirmations. It's true. It's the truth.